Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'd like to thank the TESOL Organizing Committee for inviting me. It's a lovely place, Dubai. Thank you very much for welcoming me to this region. And it's particularly nice at the moment because it was snowing in the UK when I left. So this is a really welcome break, I can assure you. Technology is all around us, and our children are growing up with this technology. And in fact, children born after 1995 will have not known a world without the internet. It will always have been there for them. And I just had a chance to look at a report before I left by the UK Office for National Statistics, and they look at use of computers and all kinds of things. And they look back at 2006, and in 2006 in the UK, 16 million people per day were accessing the internet. How many people do you think in the UK might be accessing the internet in 2012? Any guesses? No guesses. 33 million. So that's more than doubled in 6 years. So that's the rate at which we're all growing, the rate at which we're all using technologies and so on. But I want to look today at... Oops. Just a little light. I want to look today at learners in the 21st century. Are they any different? And we keep hearing these stories about the digital natives and the digital immigrants, and all these young children know how to use technology very successfully. And us old folks, well, we're immigrants and we don't really know how to use it. And that's somewhat disempowering for teachers. There's a bit of a concern, oh, we might not be as technologically savvy as the students. So there's a real worry and there's a real concern. And certainly in the professional development that I do with my staff, in both in Sweden, both in the UK, and in some other contexts, that's always a worry, that we're digital immigrants and we don't know the technology very well. So then I also want to look at some of the underlying assumptions in this argument, this digital immigrants, digital natives argument. I look at the available evidence. What evidence is there to suggest that learners of the 21st century are different from their predecessors? Then I want to try and draw on some of the implications. Okay, so what do we mean by digital immigrants? There are a number of terms that have been used, NEP generation, millennials, and digital natives, and I just want to draw out where they've come from and what they might mean. So the NEP generation, Tapscott would argue, have come from 1977, and then he talks about the generation next as the group of students who were born from 1997. Digital natives, that's the term you're probably most familiar with. Prensky argues that these are children born after 1980. And millennials, the argument for Oblinger is that these are children born between 1982 and 1992. But I want to just call them digital natives for simplicity, because that's the term that most people are familiar with. So what's this argument? The children have grown up in this technologically rich environment. It's been part of their lives. It's part of their DNA. They've always known it. They've always grown up with it. And they're able to use these technologies very fluently to communicate with their friends. Well, we know that. We see that. We see them using their phones. We see them using Facebook and so on. So we know they can communicate well with their friends. And more importantly, they expect good access from the internet. They expect to be interconnected at all times. But one statement that Prensky makes that's very strong and somewhat controversial is that students think and process information fundamentally different from their predecessors. That's quite a strong statement. These students are very different from the ones in the past. And I've said, okay, well, where's the evidence? Let's look at the evidence of that. So, do you have any digital natives like that? I certainly have had some digital natives that looked like that. I have 4 children of my own, so I've experienced education from this side and that side. And certainly my children loved when they were younger to be sitting, working on their computers, having headsets on, talking to grandma in Canada or talking to my family back in Ireland. So my digital natives looked a little bit like that at one time. And perhaps some of your digital natives have asked you questions like that. Where did I come from, Mummy? Was I downloaded? No, you weren't. Or maybe your digital natives answer questions like this. Please read about it on Facebook. I've no time to talk to you. But, whoops, I've lost a slide here. Oh, here we go. Whoops. Somehow I've lost a slide here, not to worry. I want to look at some of the arguments that Prensky puts forward. What do they look like? So give me a second while I try and get this up. I've got a little clip to show you. And this is trying to show what Prensky's arguing about digital natives. So let's just have a look at this. But the one I really want to pick up on is that these students are wired differently and they think differently. That's the one I really want to pick up on. So let's look at some of the assertions, okay? So the assertions that come out of Prensky's argument, Prensky's position, is that young people have similar access to and familiarity with a wide range of technologies. They can exploit a full range of technologies while studying. That's a strong statement too. They can use ICT for education and personal activities more or less identically. So just because they use them in their personal lives, they can use them just as easily in their studies. And younger students know the digital world, the others have to learn it. So that's saying there's some age discrimination going on here as well. And I'm saying, okay, well, let's look at the evidence. Let's see what the evidence has to say. Now, the next bit's going to be very boring for some of you, but it's important. I'm going to look at some evidence. So if you're feeling a bit tired, you know, a bit of conference jet lag, have a little nap, because in a few minutes you're going to find I'm going to be saying the same thing. But it's important to look at the evidence and a body of evidence and see, is it saying the same thing, so we can draw some conclusions. So boring but important. So here we go. Hold on to your hat. Research findings. A couple of studies that have been done by Caruso Hartley and a few others, and they were looking at first-year students. And while they found that they were using maybe about 4 hours per week on the web, only 3% said they were using it for study purposes. So that one's immediately challenging, this first assertion by Prensky, that they can use these technologies equally for their personal and their study lives. And Oliver and Girk found that high proportions of students, over 90% of them are online, but again, few of them are using it for study purposes. So here we start to see some challenges to Prensky's argument. So another study by Kvack looked at nearly 4,500 students in the US who were entering into university and also who were college seniors. And they made lots of use of the familiar technologies, email, instant messaging, word processing, and so on. But their use actually varied by the topic they were studying. So here we see again some challenges to Prensky's argument that they use the technologies equally. But this study is saying, no, it depends on what they're studying. Use varies. So this high level of use didn't translate into preferences for wanting to use it in the classroom either. So while 31% said they wanted extensive use in the classroom, 28% said they wanted limited or no use in the classroom. So again, here are some challenges. They're not wanting to use technology in the same way in the classroom. But there are two things here that were influencing students' access. Positive classroom experience with technology in the past and previous skills generally. So here we're starting to show teachers' importance. Teachers have a real role here in early access in the junior years in school of teaching children how to use technology effectively for learning. So instead of disempowering students, what I'm trying to show is actually your roles are very important because students don't actually know how to use technology for learning purposes. Okay. Another study looked at 18,000 students, so again, not an insignificant number. And certainly they found that ICTs in all aspects of their lives, but they were only comfortable with a core set. Okay, and they're not familiar with some specialised technology, so they don't know about all technologies, despite what Prensky's been saying. So these were similar findings to Kovac's previous study, and high levels of use and skill did not translate again into preferences for the classroom. Okay, and they had a moderate preference for using technology in some of their courses as a supplement. So again, we see some more challenges to this argument. Am I starting to repeat myself? Okay, here we go. Another study in Australia looking at students who were coming into first year, and they were highly technologically savvy. Okay, as we would expect, we know that. But beyond some of those more traditional technologies, again, patterns of access and use were variable. And quote, while some students have embraced the technologies and tools of the net generation, this is by no means the universal student experience. Okay, so they're not all using technologies the same in all circumstances. Another study. Okay, and this is a group in the US that are doing repeated studies over and over again looking at undergraduate use of ICT. Again, widespread use of mainstream technologies for web browsing, keeping in touch with friends, and so on. But few of them were actually using the technology to create things. So these first activities were somewhat more passive, and the use of other technologies to create activity, to create objects, and so on, were not so well used. Okay. And about 5% of them were using social networking sites to communicate with their instructors. Okay, so students' topic area also impacted on their skills and their preferences. So here again we see the context becoming important. It's not universal use. Okay, Ipsos Mori, that's a large marketing company in the UK, and they looked at students who were moving from schools to university and what their expectation was. Okay, and once again, high access to a range of technologies, but they only undertook a limited range of activities. So their skill level is limited, okay? They only know how to use a few things, but they know how to use a few technologies, but the way they use them is limited, okay? And once again, their fluency in the use of technology is based upon their experiences at school. So once again, I'm saying teachers have a very important role here in how they train their students to use the technologies for educational purposes, okay? And importantly, there's a separation here between their academic worlds, what they do for learning, and their social worlds. So that's challenging Prensky's argument again that they're using technologies equally well in their study and personal lives. Now, because I'm getting a bit repetitive, I think it's time for you to do something. So you might have to get into twos. This is awful. People might have to move. But first of all, I want you to take a pencil or a pen, and I want you to write your name. So I want to show you what this is like from the student's perspective. So take a pen or pencil and write your name. It's going to take you all of about 10 seconds, I guess. Pardon? Okay, if you want. But I think that it's lost if you don't use a pen or pencil. So, okay, everybody written their name. Okay, next activity. Take the same pen or pencil and draw the face of the person next to you. So you don't have to turn around and look at somebody next to you. So I want you to draw their face. And hopefully it's not as scary as the picture on the right. All finished, you got a nice little picture. Let's see your pictures, hold them up. Okay, the National Portrait Gallery in the UK has nothing to worry about. Now, how did the first task and the second task compare? Which was easiest? The first task, because the first task is a familiar task. You must write your name at least once a week. But how many times do you draw the face of the person next to you? Probably for some of us, not since school. That's what it's like for the students. Because in many ways they're using the digital technologies for familiar tasks, such as writing their names. But drawing people's faces is a different task, and they're not skilled in that, and they have to be taught at school how to use a pencil or a pen to do some artistry. And it's the same, okay? It's the same in school. They might well be able to use digital technologies for familiar tasks to them, such as communicating with their friends and so on, but actually using the technology for learning purposes, they need to be shown how. I'm not talking about technical skills here, I'm talking about pedagogical skills, study skills, all the things you're good at. Okay? So I'm going to get boring again, so you can go back to sleep. Okay? UCL, University College London, did a cyber study in 2008, and they found that there was very little evidence of generational shifts. So they were challenging, once again, this argument about digital natives and digital immigrants. Okay? And they found very little improvement in students' information skills. Okay? And you'll know this one, about students exhibiting this uncritical trust in branded search engines. And we know which one they're talking about because that word's going to be in the dictionary. Google it. Okay? So they try to get by with Google. And what the study found is few of them knew how to search effectively and how to evaluate the information found. And those are skills that they have to be taught. How to evaluate the information they find, how to discern its importance, how to discern how reliable it is, how to discern how they can trust it. Okay? It's like reading a newspaper article. You get the same story in several papers. Which ones do you trust? How do you compare and contrast them? All the things you're good at teaching your students. You have to do that with a slightly different tool this time. So what I'm saying is take back the power, seize the power. Don't let this argument take you over. So all the information literacy skills they find of young people, they're asking, are they appropriate for the 21st century? And are they appropriate for the demands of higher education? So while they might be skilled in using digital technologies, they're not really skilled in information literacy skills. They don't really know how to discern what's good information, what isn't, and so on. So that still has to be taught. Okay, Chris Jones ran a study in 2010 called The Net Generation, and he looked at 550 students in four different types of institution. Okay, and one of the interesting findings was the under 20s at a distance education university use social networking less than students at a face-to-face institution. And what this is saying is that they're not using the technologies equally in all contexts, that context is important. The nature of the institution might be a factor in affecting how they use certain technologies. So there are lots of things here starting to influence what our young people and what our students do and how they use technologies. Its use is not universal. Okay? So what they're studying, the type of study they're doing, the type of topic they're studying, the type of institution that they're at, had more influence upon students' use and access of the technologies than their age. Okay? And very importantly, what Chris found was that their use for social purposes and for study purposes differ. And that, again, is challenging Prensky's argument. So I don't want you to worry about what these figures mean. I just want you to look at the two areas. So on this side, we have use for study purposes, and on the right-hand side, we have use for social and leisure purposes. And you don't need to read the figures. All you need to see is that the picture's different. And it is different. So again, this is challenging Prensky's argument that they're using the technology for social purposes and study purposes equally. They're not. The evidence suggests they're not. Angelos and John Richardson did a study very recently, the study's just been published, 2013, and they looked at 4,000 students in a distance education university, which is my own university. And one of the interesting studies was that 60% of the 60 to 69-year-olds responded to the online survey, and yet only 46% of the younger group. Okay? So I thought that was a very interesting finding. Those old fogies can fill in online questionnaires better than, or respond better, shall I say, than the younger students. Okay? And interestingly enough, students in all age groups were very positive about the use of technology. It wasn't the case that the younger group were more positive about technology than the older group weren't. Another interesting finding, I thought. And very interesting was that older students were more likely to be using a deep approach to their learning in relation to their use of technology. So they were looking for how the technology and the learning was working together to help them understand things, a deep approach to learning. Now, I thought I'd just give you this table to show you how access among these different groups is similar, I would say, rather than different, because there's a feeling that perhaps the younger students have greater access to technologies. So I've just drawn a blue band and a yellow band, because I just took these two groups. And if you have a look, the 21 to 30-year-olds, yes, they have access to quite a lot of technologies. But look at that 60 to 69 group. They've got quite a lot of access too, haven't they? You know, we tend to hear all these arguments about digital natives and digital immigrants, and you tend to think, oh, the younger students are so well-equipped and they've got all this access and so on. But look at that older group, eh? We're in there, us oldies. Now, if you look at the personal digital assistant, there's only 3.9 of the 21 to 30-year-old group that have them. But look at the 30 to 39 group, the 40 to 49 group, the 50 to 59 group, and the 60 to 69 group. They're making more use of personal digital assistants. And that's probably because of context again. So context is very important. It's probably the case that these older groups are maybe using it for business purposes and so on. So very interesting again. So I just put the table up because I want to show that it's not about age. It's about purpose. It's about use. It's about context. And those things are much, much, much more influential than their age. So, back to the assertions. These were Prinsky's original assertions. So let's have a look at how many of them we can support. First one, students have similar access to and familiarity with a wide range of technologies. We didn't find that to be true, did we? And I've gone through quite a lot of studies, and very large sample studies too. Let's look at the next one. Students can exploit a full range of technologies while studying. Well, some of the studies I've reviewed this morning have shown that actually they're not using these technologies for study purposes. They're familiar with them in terms of social networking and communication, but for studying, that got a big X as well. How about the next one? Students' use of technologies for educational and personal or social activities are used more or less identically. We didn't find that to be true either, did we? And how about the last one? Younger students know the digital world, the others have to learn it. Well, certainly the last study that I showed you, the one that John Richardson and Alan Jelz used, threw that out of the water as well. So we didn't find any of those things to be true. Now, maybe I'm just a sloppy researcher, and maybe I just haven't looked at all the evidence. Or maybe I haven't looked at large enough sample sizes, but I think I've looked at enough to convince me that there are a few holes in this argument, that the digital natives are different from the digital immigrants, or that age is a discriminator. I really am sure that the evidence is lacking here. So I'm not really sure the students of today are any different from their predecessors. I think it's really about the context within which they're studying, perhaps the country, the institution, their backgrounds, and so on. So let's look at some of the evidence, the summary. There was scant evidence that I could find that younger students are thinking and processing their information differently. Okay? And it's important we look at the evidence, because if you think of, you go to the doctor and you say, oh doctor, I've got a sore leg, and he gives you some pills, you come back 2 weeks later and you say, these have made me really ill, you find out you've got some permanent damage to your liver, and you say, well, why did you give me these pills? And the doctor says, well, I thought it would work. You wouldn't be too happy. You'd want to know that those drugs had been tried and tested and there was some evidence that they worked. So think in education, we just have to be a little careful as well, that we just don't accept some of these assertions, that we look at the evidence to see, well, actually, is that true? So age is not the sole discriminator in technology use, particularly for education. Okay? So institutions, very important, the type of institution they're at, the type of background they come from, their domain, and their previous study experience. So your role as a teacher in the younger years and the junior years is about teaching them how to use technology for their learning. That's not about the technical skills. I'm not talking about technical skills. I'm talking about study skills, how we use these things purposefully to help us learn. Now, why do we have these arguments? What's underpinning this? Where has this come from? And Bennett argues it's a bit of a moral panic. You know, all this technology's come in and people are using very inflammatory language. And all of these arguments are couched in very dramatic terms. Some of these statements that Prinsky's made are very dramatic. And it's appeal for this urgent action. You know, all this technology is coming in. It's almost like this fear-mongering. You know, we're disenfranchised as teachers. We don't know how to do this. But actually, we know how to be teachers, okay? And the technology is a tool. We have to look at how this tool can be used to support the learning, okay? It's not driving us, okay? We are driving it as teachers, as pedagogues, okay? My biggest concern with this argument, the digital immigrants, the digital natives argument, is how it has affected professional development in our profession. And I'm very concerned that it's led to this, what I call a deficit model. And it says, oh, you're not technically savvy in this technology, you're not technology savvy in that technology. So it's looking at what we don't have as teachers. But I think I want to turn that around and look at what we do have as teachers and start to put you back in the driving seat and make you feel very empowered in what you can do. Because this evidence is suggesting that what you do at school with your students is far more influential than their age, okay? And also my biggest concern was that some of the older teachers that I have done professional development with, they were concerned, well, I'm older, I'm a digital immigrant, I'll never understand it. And I'm saying, no, it's nothing to do with age, okay? It's absolutely nothing to do with age. So I just want to challenge all of this notion about digital natives and digital immigrants, and I think I've shown this morning that there are a few holes in it. So I don't want you to think about changing your education just for the next generation. Yes, we're always having to change. The context is changing. Yes, we're living in a very digital world, a very interconnected world. And I talked about that yesterday, how we do need to change because the context is changing. But it isn't about age. It's about all learners, okay? It's about looking at the context within which you're operating. So technology is not the defining factor for educational change. And it's not age. It's only part of the wider context. And the context is always going to be changing for us as educators. And we've always just got to keep an eye on the context. But more importantly, it's about the underpinning pedagogy. That is the important thing. That's far more influential. I just want to talk about the implications for policymakers, and if you are in that role, if you're someone who's leading or managing or whatever in education, I think you should reject these stereotypes about younger and older learners and possibly younger and older teachers too. So please, there's not a lot of evidence to support that argument, okay? Because as we find, both younger students and older students broadly have positive attitudes to this. It's more about what they do at school is important. So while students' use of technology is important for their experience, it's the context and how it will be used and how important it is in that context that's of more value. Okay. So, the future. Education. The focus is still on developing intellectual abilities. Okay, it's still on discernment, analysis, evaluation, synthesis, and it's about learning how to learn independently and coping with uncertainty. We've always done those things, okay? And more importantly, it's about supporting learners in a variety of contexts. What works in one context will not necessarily work in another context. You have to be context sensitive, okay? So the challenge for us in the future is knowing how to use the technology in education purposefully for all learners, regardless of their age. It's not about whether they're a digital immigrant or a digital native. It's more about what you do with the technology to show your students how it can be used in their learning process. So we're only limited as teachers by our imagination, not by age. Okay, thank you. By time for one or two questions? Maybe one, two questions? Anybody got any comments even? Yes?
Can I get the mic?
I can probably organise something. It's not available online, but I could probably organise something. I'll give you my card.
I hope that we would be able to support that, your question, by placing it on the TESOL Arabia EdTech Ning. Invite you to become a participant in that. Mike, if anybody wishes to ask a question. No questions? Afraid of the mic?
How does current brain research kind of support your ideas?
Can you speak up a little
bit? Current brain research and learning, do you know how this supports your ideas about how people learn through the brain, and also anything about how learning wouldn't change because the brain learns the same way regardless of the stimulus?
I'm not really sure I understand your question.
But is there any science, neurobiology or neuroscience of the brain that supports ideas of how learners are learning through technology differently, and how it actually rewires their brain?
Not that I could find.
Nothing on the theme of distraction, that our students have a plethora of devices that distract them, and thus they're prone to being surface learners?
Yes, that is an issue, that they can get a little bit distracted, and that's always been the case, hasn't it?
Hi, thank you very much for this presentation. It's a great presentation. But I'd like to add a little comment and raise a little issue, in the sense that Mark Prensky based his study on neurolinguistics and also a lot of data related to the use of the younger generation of audiovisual materials. And the saying that we should not look at older, it's a stereotype to look at older and new generation and draw a line between two. I think he's got a point there by saying that, okay, because the younger generation is so, find the audiovisual material so appealing, we've got to be responsible for that. And I think I agree in this particular point with him.
Well, I talked yesterday about that in terms of the changing context and the mismatch between the social world outside and what we are doing with our more traditional educational models. But I don't think that argument's predicated by an age discrimination. I think we do, that's my point, we do need to respond to the wider context outside, and the social world is changing, but my argument was that it's not about age. It's about the wider context. And the context is always changing. So my point was that you should not be focusing on age, but focusing on how the context changed. Because how the social world and its influence in your region or in your classroom is going to change between contexts. So I agree with what you're saying, but my argument was it's not the fact that learners themselves are fundamentally different. Okay, the context is fundamentally different.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you for your presentation. It was great.
Thank you.
My question is, do you think technology is just allowing different types of learners with different learning styles and different learning approaches a wider range of opportunities to approach their learning? My example being myself, I find I write much better on a laptop than I ever would do on pen and paper or a typewriter. So is it just being more inclusive for a wider range of people?
Absolutely. I think it's widening the opportunity and giving learners different ways in which they can approach their learning. And I think that's what we want to do. We don't want to be using the technology to replicate what we've done in the past. We want to look at how the technology can enable us to enable our learners to learn in the ways that they're best suited to their needs.
Thanks again for the presentation. It was excellent. I just had a question. Like a lot of times my students, I'm all about technology, but when my students need to look up words in dictionaries, they like pull out their laptops or they pull out Google or their electronic dictionary. I always tell them, well, look, why don't you use a dictionary? And they always say, teacher, you know, this is technology. I'm like, yeah, I understand, but I do feel that there's something that they're missing out, you know, by picking up an actual dictionary and going through it page by page and finding those other words and looking at the alphabetical order and certain types of things like that. So there's some things that I allow both, but I still want them to get what I got, you know, going through an encyclopedia and not just Google and everything, and actually going through like that patience and that, you know, the research skills to actually find an answer, not just this quick, instant, microwave answer that you get all the time. Thank you.
So can I just ask you, what do you think has been lost in that? What do you think you gained that they're missing?
Just like that feeling of discovery, just like the feeling of needing an answer and actually searching for it, and on the way searching for that answer, I would always find many, many things, not just what I was actually looking for.
So were you getting distracted?
A little bit distracted, but I was also gaining a little more knowledge also at the same time.
Well, I think they have a multiplicity of ways of finding information. And if you feel that there's something lacking in the way they're doing that, then that maybe that's something you want to build in to your educational activities. Because maybe you give them a range of words or a range of things that they can find that are similar to a word that are like that. So maybe something if you feel they're losing that, maybe that's something you just need to build into the activity.
Okay, any last question? No? I want to thank you, Linda, on behalf of everybody here for presenting what you have today. And we'll do what we can to make it available to everyone online, again, through the TESOL Arabia EdTech Ning. If you like details about that, please check with me right after the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ha ha ha.